Hello to you. It's Jaquetta Williams with your Health Connection. You know, we have an outstanding show that's about to start in like 3-2 now. So I'm going to go ahead and jump right in. We're talking about cancer, different forms of cancer. We're talking to survivors, and then we're talking to caregivers, what it takes in order to be a caregiver and what it takes in order to be a survivor. Our first guest, his name is Ezell Blues. I know it sounds like a jazz singer's name. It is his birth given name. I asked for his not birth certificate, but his driver's license. He showed it to me. That's his birth given name. Ezell Blues is a 9-year prostate cancer survivor. He has a family history of cancer in his family. His dad had prostate cancer. His mother had breast cancer. His son was diagnosed with cancer back in when he was 14 years old. Now he's 19 years old. And his son has been battling with it off and on. Ezell is going to tell you more about that. And then we have a good friend of mine. Her name is Crystal Jordan. Now, Crystal is a 7-year cancer survivor. She survived ovarian cancer. Crystal is a really good close personal friend of mine. She is a public relations dynamo, shero, super chick. She is the publicist for people like Tawanda Braxton. She is also the publicist for my good friend, Chili, you know, from the group TLC. Chili and What Chili Wants. That girl. Mm-hmm. So that's my friend, Crystal Jordan. Again, she is a 7-year survivor of ovarian cancer. We're going to talk to her. And then my third friend, she is one of my sorors. She is just knowing me and knowing her is like knowing the same person. We both started our career years ago in Augusta, GA. Yes, we did. She also worked here in Atlanta at 11 Alive. When I say her name, Tiffany Cochran Edwards, I know you know her. You know Tiffany, right? But what you also know is her famous dad, her father, the late, great Johnny Cochran. I really don't need to say anything else about him, but I will say he's represented people like the late, great Michael Jackson and that other person, O.J. Simpson. Okay. So what I want to tell you about when it comes to Tiffany, her father, I cannot believe it's been nearly 10 years since Johnny Cochran passed away. So let's jump right in. Thank you, everybody, for being here. I hope I did your introductions well.
Yes.
Very well.
Okay, Ezell, let's start with you since you're the only man in the room. He's very handsome, ladies. If you've seen me tweet or Instagram or put it on Facebook, make sure you check Ezell out. Ezell is very handsome. Okay, Ezell, let's talk about when you found out you had prostate cancer, particularly since you've had this in your family. So I'm sure you probably kind of guessed it may knock on your door, and it did.
Absolutely. With the history of my family having cancer, I knew it was very important for me to get a regular checkup. Mm-hmm. And one day I was getting my regular checkup and found out I was at the beginning stages of prostate cancer. At that time, there were some decisions I had to make. As far as the cure, would I allow it to stay in and get a stem cell implant, or would I use the radiation, or would I just have it removed? And once I got my options, I decided to not prolong it. Mm-hmm. And I made a decision to have the prostate removed and haven't looked back since. And that's been about 9 years ago now.
So with so much cancer being in your family, I know it has to be tough for you as a dad having your son being diagnosed at 14 years old. Can you talk about that? And you're telling me you're going to be a donor for him as well.
Right. He was diagnosed August of 2008 with leukemia. It came as a total surprise when we found out. And over the last 5 years, we've been in and out of the hospital a number of times, mm-hmm. With different cancers coming and going, the leukemia. Then I made a decision to find out if I was a donor, it would be a good match for him. Mm-hmm. And I am, and probably within the next year or so, we'll be doing a bone marrow transplant.
You wrote a book too, right?
After I had cancer, I found out some things about myself that I didn't know.
Like what?
Like I was a writer.
And okay.
I began to write, and I published self-published a book of poems. And I'm actually a spoken word artist. Mm-hmm. I found that out I guess when you go through things like that, you have an opportunity to look within yourself and find out different things about yourself mm-hmm. that you didn't know.
Mm-hmm. I think you find yourself in those periods when it's quiet and you have no choice but to fight for your life, and there's a stillness about it. So,
Absolutely.
So let's go to Crystal. Crystal, you are an ovarian cancer survivor. Talk about how you found out that you even had cancer.
Well, I'll start by saying, because I think this is really important for women, especially young women. I found out when I was 31 years old, and I had had two children, early in my 20s, and I had a really hard second pregnancy. And so after my second pregnancy at 23, I had not gone back to the doctor. I was working and being a mom and being a wife, and I had not had a pap smear since my second child, and that was about 8 years.
Wow, Crystal, that's a long time.
It was a long time, and it was really irresponsible. And I'm looking back, and I realized that. So I had no idea. I wasn't going to the doctor. I was just, like I said, really engrossed in being a mother and
working and life working getting
and,
in the way.
And exactly. And mm-hmm. so, and just not taking care of myself. And so I started to have irregular periods, and I noticed I would feel bloated a lot. You know, again, you just think, maybe my body's changing. I'm getting a little older, because I just, you know, passed 30. So I thought, well, maybe this is just something, and didn't really give it a lot of thought. I started having pain. Periods got stronger, and it just didn't make a lot of sense, and still didn't go to the doctor until the pain finally sent me to the doctor in a place where
doubled
I was
over, doubled over. You can't walk.
I actually, because I had a book come out, so I was doing book signings, and I was in Dallas doing a book signing, and I could not. I had to get up to go to the airport and just couldn't get up. I was in so much pain. I had eaten a meal and I just couldn't keep food down. Food, it seemed like anything I ate, I was full. Mm-hmm. And so I got on the plane. I was in ridiculous pain, got home and went to the doctor the next day because it just about put me on my back.
Wow.
And I went to the doctor, and I will never forget. It was older doctor, and it wasn't my doctor. It's just because I had to go in quickly to a clinic, and he came back and he said, he had tears in his eyes. And wow. He said, "You're so young, and I hate to tell you what I think this is, but I want to make sure that you," my husband at the time was with me, and he said, you need to make sure that you have insurance. And you need to just make sure that that's all taken care of. Because
Were you thinking, what in the world is it if he's telling you all that?
Well, it's funny because I think at that age, you don't really think anything could really be wrong. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, but you see a doctor come back with tears in his eyes. So then it freaks you out. Mm-hmm. And we both were just overwhelmed and he told me that he thought that there was a chance that it could be ovarian cancer, and that I needed to immediately come in and have a biopsy. So I did, and the sad thing about it, the doctor that I went to my doctor, and they're like, this, you know, what, how have you not come in before now? Like, what are you?
How are you dealing with pain like that? What stage was your ovarian cancer, Crystal?
It was stage one, but I was in a lot of pain, mm-hmm. and at the point, it's like in a month when I actually acknowledged that something was wrong and had to go to the doctor. I was in so much pain sometimes I could not, like, it hurt to breathe, you know, and that was hard for me, who was someone who was always used to doing everything for everyone else, to actually have to sit. It was very difficult. And my kids, it was scared my family. I had a really, you know, a young family. And but it made me sit, and I couldn't be the superwoman that I was trying to be, that none of us can really be.
None
that
of us
we're
ever
trying
are.
To be. You know, because I felt like, so I had a partial hysterectomy, but I was sharing earlier that at the time the tumor was it was, you know, you have a tumor there. There's a size and there's a lot of inflammation. So at the time that I had surgery, they were like, another doctor comes in and says, we're not sure if we'll be able to. It looks like it's up against your gallbladder. It's a really small area. And they thought I may have to have a colostomy. They thought they may have to remove some of my gallbladder. So I remember going to sleep and just thinking, God, what has happened to my life? Like, what in the world? Like, I'm not able to have children anymore. I'm just 31 years old. It was just like, why has this happened? Everything in my life has stopped and turned around. And I had surgery, and the surgery went well, but emotionally, I wasn't well. And I think that a lot of people that deal with this disease, you don't understand what that does to you emotionally, because your mortality becomes immediately a concern. It's that has everything. Not been. Mm-hmm. And you just don't think about life. I wasn't thinking about life in those terms. And just to quickly kind of go to what Ezell said, I'm a better person after going through that. I was the mother that was trying so hard to do all the right things for my children and my family. And the most important thing is the time that we spend. And so I learned to cherish and really value and slow down and smell the roses, because I wasn't doing that before. And I think God had to, I'm stubborn by nature. I think God had to literally stop me. And I remember laying on my back, you know, I couldn't, the lights had to be off in the room. You know, you'd be in so much pain that the light irritates you. And just having to listen to God, like, what do you want? What is this?
Because are you going back to that moment now? Because clearly I see, you know, she's crying and you can hear it in her voice.
Absolutely.
Let me let you pull it together or feel the moment. And I'm going to switch it over to Tiffany now. Tiffany, you know, you didn't have to go through it firsthand, meaning you didn't have cancer. But I oftentimes think when you are a caregiver and when you are watching someone you love go through something that's so challenging, you go through it too, even though you're not physically. Would that be a good?
That's accurate. It's extremely accurate. Before I get started, I just want to say that I'm just in awe of all of you having been through this and survived. Mm-hmm. And you're absolutely right when it says it changes you, because being around someone to see them struggle. And for me, I had never seen my dad sick, not even with a cold, you know, in, 30, 40 years, never seen him sick. So when we found out his diagnosis, immediately when you hear brain tumor, you think, okay, this is not good at all.
Right. What did you think and what did your dad think?
Initially, he was so optimistic. He was like, we're going to beat this. It's not, you know, it's not a big deal. And the journalist in me, I was like, I need to know the name of it. I need to know everything about
all of the information.
And, you know, and that's the danger with technology, and just that you can go and Google anything. Mm-hmm. So, of course, I got the full name of the type of brain cancer he had.
And what kind? Do you remember what kind?
Oh, yeah. It's a glioblastoma multiforme. I'll never forget it. And if you Google it, it's just, you know, you need to be ready when you Google
what is it?
The most malignant form of tumor, the deadliest form. Prognosis is usually about 6 months.
Wow.
And
so there is no survival. It's just.
No, his was inoperable.
Wow. Okay.
So.
How do you digest that, Tiffany?
You know, just small pieces. I remember in the beginning, he was fortunate enough to be a part of a vaccine trial. And the doctor said, this is going to extend his life. And that's all, you know, he was just like, we're going to tackle it in parts. And the first, the first part of the treatment was really wonderful. He reacted very well to it. It slowed the tumor down. Of course, he had numbness on one side of his body. And that was a big adjustment. Because
your dad is Johnny Cochran,
right? So
and you've got numbness.
Exactly. He had some memory lapses. He couldn't walk anymore. And I had just gotten engaged. And I just remember, you know, he was like, I have to walk you down the aisle. And I said, Dad, don't worry about it. I was just so grateful that, you know, at that point we knew he would be at our wedding.
Yes.
But I remember he went to physical therapy twice a day. And he was, like, determined. And, you know, the survivor and the courage. And he just brought everything he had to this battle. And I, you know, I was a different person seeing it because, you know, you think you're having a bad day.
Yes.
And it puts everything in perspective so mm-hmm. easily, so quickly. And, you know, he was a healthy man. We didn't know anybody who had brain cancer. How did you get this? And right. I just remember talking to his doctor, and his doctor was wonderful, answered all kind of questions. And he said, you know, I don't know how he got it. I have an idea how he got it. But we're not even going to deal with that. Let's just focus on the treatment.
What was the idea?
He thought it was caused by his early cell phone use, mm-hmm. not the cell phones we use now. This is not an indictment on
of course,
you know,
of course.
Cell phones right now. But, you know, he was using cell phones back in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of radiation.
Up
really,
to his ear.
Up to his ear. Mm-hmm. Really warm on the ear. Really hot on the ear, actually. And so that's what they believe. Because a lot of people who had this type of tumor worked in plants. He never worked at a plant.
Mm-hmm.
Those kinds of things. Because mm-hmm. it's a very specific
kind of
type, mm-hmm. you know. But, you know, it is hard being a caregiver because you're thinking, do I have what it takes to help this person
right.
get through this?
And your father. It's not just
it's my
your dad.
Dad. He's yeah. taking care of me. What do I need to right. take care of him?
Right.
How do I get it if
right.
I don't have it?
Right.
But those things, they all come together because.
Let me pause it right here for you, Tiffany. I know a lot of you probably have questions for Ezell or Tiffany or Crystal. The phone number to call is 404-880-9255. Again, 404-880-9255. The phone lines are open right now, and we want to hear from you. So please feel free to do that. Or you can also tweet your question if you like at CCRTD or at Jaquetta W. But you can also call us at 404-880-9255. Now, let's go back to you, Tiffany. I know that one of the difficult things you said, you know, how do I even manage this? So with being a caregiver, I guess you have to talk about the strength that you need to have, but also when do you have your fall down moments? And I'm sure they had to be when you were away from your dad.
Exactly. I think I decided early on, excuse me, that I needed to be, we took his lead and he was so optimistic, smiling, happy. So how could you come in and not be?
Right.
And my dad had a tremendous sense of humor. So after his diagnosis, his doctor said, you know, we're going to talk about some diet changes. I really want you to reevaluate, and we're going to include a lot of whole grains and vegetables and fruits. And I remember my dad said, well, I already have cancer now, so can I just go ahead and get the double cheeseburger? You know, and those of you from California know In-N-Out.
No. Yes.
And he was like, yes. My daughter can go and get me some In-N-Out. And the doctor was like, I really don't want you to have it. And he's like, really? So he's like, go get me. So, you know, I was like, what can I say? Mm-hmm. I'm like, I'll eat it with you.
Right.
But, you know, we didn't do it a lot. But
right.
that made him happy. Of course I'm going to get him In-N-Out burger. But it was those moments. But the most important thing is I was put on Facebook that I was going to be here. And one of my girlfriends is also our source, Sophia.
Yes.
She said, you know, the time that you spend with someone going through this.
Mm-hmm.
It puts your life in perspective. You know, after that, I quit my job. And a lot of people don't really know. I mean, my whole life changed because the person who was inspirational, it just watching him fight this with everything he had. And, you know, 6 months, he lived another 18 months. So mm-hmm. it was amazing to see that, you know, you can do anything.
Mm-hmm.
When you pray and you have people praying for you, you can do anything. So I just knew that we took the lead from him. There was lots of laughter. He shared everything he wanted to tell me. And I shared
everything.
Is
there anything you want to tell us that he told you that's okay to say?
You know, it's just anything you can imagine.
Your most important memory. How about that?
Goodness, that's a good question. I just, you know, he was like, life is to be lived. You need to do whatever you want to do. You need mm-hmm. to get serious about things. It matured me in a way that I can't even tell you. And I knew after he passed that I needed to get my life in order. I mean, I loved my career, but I thought, there's more for me out there. And I need to start a family. I need to have somebody to understand what life is all about. And mm-hmm. so that's why I am sad that he's gone, but I know that we had the best time because the most important thing is I ended up leaving my job and took family leave. So I was there with him through the last 6 weeks of his life and was there in California when he passed. And that's the best decision I've ever made. Mm-hmm. And because I know I didn't want to have any regrets that I wasn't with him. And so everything in that matter was fine. But after he was gone, you know, I went into a depression. And, of course, I didn't realize it till later.
Right. When you're in it, and you don't know it. But when then you look back, you're like, oh, yeah. I was depressed. Okay.
But, you know, I was journaling. And I was like, gosh, you know, just the thought process. Mm-hmm. And I was okay until we finally had another meeting with his doctor. And I remember he said, your dad has weeks to months at this point. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow. And so when he passed, you know, his favorite holiday was Easter. And he's like, I just hope that I live long enough to see another Easter. And God was so good. He let him have another Easter. And he died after Easter. Mm-hmm. And I said I wasn't going to cry.
Yeah, and I'm like, it's okay.
But it taught me that you got to live life on purpose every day. And, you know, as soon as we were ready, we started our family because it was important. The only thing that I regret is that she never got to meet. My daughter never got to meet my dad because they are the same person. Mm-hmm. And it's so funny to see how that's manifested in your children, you know. But I live my life completely different now. Mm-hmm. I know that I can handle anything. Mm-hmm. And I know he's always with me. So I don't mourn him not being here because when I gave birth to my daughter and she yelled, I was like, wait a minute. She's got a spirit from somebody. So those are the things that you learn, taking care of someone with a terminal illness.
Don't forget, we're waiting, standing by to hear from you. I know you have a lot of questions. Again, the number is 404-880-9255. Again, 404-880-9255. And we're coming right back.